This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, September 3rd, 2008.
I'd like to begin the meeting just so we don't
get behind and stay longer than necessary. So shall we? We have all of our Rodney. Hey, Rodney, let's begin.
Okay.
We have our names and affiliations here. We could introduce ourselves, but that would take a little more time, and we've eaten it up already. At some point, when we have a little bit of extra time, we'll get an opportunity to get to know what we do outside of UA a little bit more. But for now, let's follow the agenda and begin. Oh, I'm. First of all, Marty Hatch, as it says there, I'm the acting chair, and one of the things we'll do later is determine who will be the chair of the UA and vice chair. But for now, I'll be running this meeting. Let's see, call for late additions to the agenda. I've had a couple of people say that they would like to add items, and so let's talk about that. Mark?
I'd like to just briefly discuss. I had a meeting with the registrar, with the students of the executive board, about people's office schedulizer, and I think that's important information.
And Randy Wayne has also written me saying that he is interested in that topic also be included. So let's have that be in the item 10, additional items from the floor, as an additional item for the agenda. Okay, what was the second item you said? The second thing that you mentioned?
Academic Integrity Committee.
Right.
I'd like to briefly discuss just where that's going and where our stage is.
Okay, maybe what we'll do is put that into discussion of UA committee liaisons, not because it is a UA committee, but because it'll be useful to. Okay. Any other additions to the agenda? Yes, Leanne.
The new child care center for Cornell faculty, staff, and students. As a member of the employee assembly, I've heard some concerns that it's not affordable for some staff.
Okay, now that could also fall in our Family Services Committee because that's one of the purviews of the Family Services Committee. So as we discuss people who are, you know, interested in things like that, we can speak to the whoever is the delegate from the University Assembly to that committee.
Okay.
about how they could represent our concerns or what we might do to vivify that concern on the campus. Cost of child care. I wish that we had the... Okay. Any other additions? Okay, so let's move on. Approval of minutes of May 7th. Now, not everybody who is here now was there then, but I did direct your attention to those minutes and sent you a copy of the draft because it had some discussion of the question of liaisons to the UA committee there, and some people who had already expressed interest in the being liaisons from our assembly. So, speaking just about the minutes as such, those of you who were there, do you see any corrections or additions that you'd like to make, or have you seen in the process reviewing them? Mark, no. So I have a motion to accept the minutes. Motion by Mark.
I'll second.
Second. By Cade. All in favor, I guess. Any opposed? So unanimous accepting of those minutes. Report on caucus for chairs of delegations. I had this in there, it says 15 minutes, but I guess I thought that one of the things we said at the meeting that has those minutes, that's recorded in the minutes that you just approved, was that perhaps the different delegations would want to affirm or take a new vote on who it is that the respective delegation would want to have be the member of the executive committee. Right now, the current delegations are the leaders are Mark, pardon me, and Seth for undergraduate and graduate students. Mark, I think you're on with that, and Kate, you're the only other undergraduate here. Rebecca's not going to be here. Asa, have you guys caucused and agreed?
And we need to set that last one also. Asa should be a short lady.
Okay. But that's acceptable. So Mark is the executive committee member from the undergraduates. As far as graduate students, Nick, you're here. Has there been any discussion amongst the graduate students, Ed, Edward Strong, and Seth?
Yeah, we talked at the end of last semester, and I just talked with Seth last week, I think we're
okay. Okay, so Seth is chair there. So that employees, Rodney has been serving as pro tem, and Leon, you're here, and Rodney's here. Bill and Patricia may not be with us much longer, I understand, but that leaves Bill. Between Leon and Rodney, what's your feeling about this? Do you want to?
I think it's fine for Rodney if he wants to continue.
Right. We have those. Let's. Okay.
I also have Bill from or email from Pat. And
you have an email from Pat and Bill.
Yeah, but Amy has copies up from last May.
Okay, that's Rodney speaking. I'm just, you have to cue in on it. I'm sorry, could you introduce yourself to everyone? I apologize.
My name is Leon.
No, I'm just
kidding.
Just kidding.
Yeah,
yeah.
Hi, my name is
Leon. I'm a junior.
Okay.
And I'm from
okay, great. Ellie, because she's new at this, doesn't know us infamous characters, needs to have us announce that we are going to speak when we speak so that she can be sure to have record of who it is who's saying what she's taking note of in the minutes. Okay, so Rodney is there now, at least faculty, and we have four members of the faculty here now. Faculty delegation. What is your pleasure, faculty members?
I've seen the minutes going around. I'm not qualified to be on the executive committee, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. You need to process. Mm-hmm.
Ellis has been around a while. Randy's been around a while. What's your feeling, Ellis? We could do a separate caucus. All right.
Maybe spring really fall
on
this
one. Okay,
so
Randy was saying the same thing. All right.
We could split it, you know, for some hours.
I could, it's always very cumbersome to do that. Oh, we could split it during the year. Let's discuss it as faculty, especially when Elizabeth and Abram or Abe are around, and perhaps we still are a vacant member. Vacant seat. All right, I'll stick with it for the fall term or until death do us part. And then let's move on then. That took only 10 minutes. That's lovely. So let's move on now to the election of chair and vice chair of the UA. Now, in the charter of the UA, it says that the chair and the vice chair are appointed by the entire body, or elected by the entire body. Then if if the chair comes or vice chair come from one of, they have to come from one of the four constituencies, then I believe that person takes the place, takes the, what?
They drop down on the board.
Right. Right. So we don't have to elect the chair and the vice chair out of the executive committee. Now, I think some of you we directed everybody to look at the charter to see what the duties of the chair and the vice chair are. I mean, speaking of somebody who was the chair last year and took over from a system which was four chairs rotating, I can say that I think that the system that accomplishes the most in terms of the UA goals is one that has a clear chair and a clear vice chair doing certain things. Because when you had the four executive committee members sharing the chairmanship and on a rotating basis chairing the meeting, at some point along the line, some person here, through confusion or lack of time, didn't take responsibilities on that are necessary to prepare the meeting and get it going to accomplish what's necessary in the meeting. I think there are two things that come out of that. One is that we need to be serious about the choice of the chair and vice chair, and second, that the people who want to take that on should realize it's a responsibility they have to fulfill in order for the UA to really accomplish an awful lot of what it's supposed to. And so what we could do is we have 20 minutes for this, perhaps a little bit more. Are there any comments about that from the rest of the body about what I've just said? Any thoughts about the nature of the organization of the offices and what they're supposed to accomplish? Have you all looked at those things? So, do we have nominations then for the chair?
Marty, before you ask the nomination, do we have those people who are looking to be the chair? I mean, it doesn't have to be a burden, but it can be a burden. Are there those who are interested in being the chair?
Anybody coming forward?
I just, having been on UA for a long, long time under both systems, the last system, which had the four chairs, in fact grew out of a state of the UA in which the committee structure had, for the most part, pretty much fallen apart. We didn't have really clearly defined committees. In fact, there was a question about whether or not the committees would be actually even functioning or whatever. And under those circumstances, the idea of four people running things, in a way, took over part of the committee thing. Prior to that, the committee structure was stronger, and having a single executive and a vice chair really turned out to be the best. And I acted as chair one semester of that system. And as long as you have the committee well established, that you have the liaisons who are doing their part within those committees, the duties of the chair is not quite as onerous as it might seem. I mean, that's all I can say about it. So as long as the people who are the liaisons of the committee are doing what they're supposed to do, the chair committees are certainly a little more well-defined.
You got a question. The minutes we just approved seem to indicate that the committee systems are not all working well. What is the role of the chair to whip them into shape, or is this just academia and we kind of muddle through and tell somebody who doesn't want to be in charge of committee steps up? And
well, actually, in my memo to you guys, what I hoped I was stating history and not just wishful thinking, but I said that I thought last year we had taken a really great step in energizing at least some of the committees, And certainly the Code and Judicial Committee, which didn't need energy, it was always doing what it was supposed to do, but it did it a lot better, in an exemplary kind of fashion last year. So transportation advisory, planning committee, both of those we've gotten somewhere in developing our relationship with them, and the Family Services Committee we actually added, and as Bill commented, we don't yet have it in our charter, and we want to do that fairly soon.
Mike, to jump in on this real quick, since you mentioned it.
Well, we're going to come to committees.
Okay, fine.
We're going to come to committees in a minute, but right now we're just talking about chair and vice chair. So I would like to suggest that the role of the chair will be to continue to assist those committee representatives to get there, to get where they need to, and to produce what they need to for our benefit, and to urge us on in areas that they think are appropriate and necessary for the university to come to terms with from in their respective areas. So it won't be just to actually staff the committee or to go and be there. If it degenerates once again to that, is that too strong a word, Ellis? Where the chair has to do all that as well, or the four chairs or whatever, then I think the UA will have to think seriously about what it's here for. Yeah.
Part of the problem we're getting is a lot of these first up committees don't exist anymore.
We're going to get to committees in a minute.
Because this is all the same, I think, conversation. It all revolves around how our system works, and the fact of the matter is a lot of times in certain areas it doesn't work.
Well, some do and some don't, Mark, and I know you said that. Campus planning does exist, transportation does exist, codes and judicial does exist, health services does exist, family services does exist. So those are important areas, both from the family through to the institution.
I think it's just a matter of getting between committees that system works, where we have a full committee that's staffed, actually who runs an express group or something, where we become more reactive, where perhaps we have one liaison who is a source of information flow, but not necessarily have a committee around them. The problem with the charter is different like that.
Maybe, but we'll get to the charter committee in a minute. Yeah.
Leon, I'd like to go back to what James.
Go ahead.
Is this about committees or chairs?
So I have to leave.
Is this about chair or committee?
Chair.
Okay, fine.
And what I wanted to say, from our perspective, a big issue with having a four-chair system is that's not supported by the charter as it is. And I think the position of our office has been that if the assembly wants to experiment with a new system of leadership, we'll support it, but we'd like to have it formally defined in the charter somehow. And it would be our strong preference that, even if that's the direction the assembly wants to go, that until the charter is amended to reflect that, that there be a chair and a vice chair. And I mean, the principal role we see for that is the vice chair make sure there's an agenda for every meeting.
Well, let's go on to what's stated in the charter. It's the responsibility of the chair of the UA, or in the event of absence, the vice chair, to chair all meetings of the UA and the executive committee, and to work with leaders of other constituent assemblies in order to provide efficient communication channels. Now, the working with leaders of other constituent assemblies is something that the chair, in my period, hadn't done yet. So that's something where we can move more positively. And then the vice chair of the UA, or designee, keeps the minutes of all meetings. Well, fortunately, we have that covered, except that the vice chair can be of assistance in clarifying minutes or something of that sort, should it be necessary. Notifying members of the UA of a special meeting and of important matters proposed for action at any meeting. Make public and publicize the reports and actions of the UA and its committees where appropriate. Transmit reports, actions, and recommendations as the Assembly shall direct. And that means transmitting any resolutions to the President for his consideration and other things that might occur. Vice Chair also reports periodically on the disposition of current status of the Assembly actions and recommendations. That is, what is the status? Having cleared a resolution and gone to the President, what's the status of that resolution in the President's office and with the trustees? The Vice Chair shall also supervise and exchange information and opinion between the Assembly and the community at large, and as convener of the chair and chair of the Assembly Systems Review Committee. I don't know about that last one. So the vice chair has a lot of responsibilities as well, and let's think about those two together, and keeping in mind what Ari was saying, let's think about, you know, how we should, you know, who are appropriate. Who were the volunteers that put up their hands to those positions? I'm supposed to be on leave this semester, and I'm willing to come to meetings and be the executive representative of the faculty should that be, you know, appropriate. But the sharing of the things is a little bit dicey for me.
I'm willing to do either. Whatever you guys want me to do.
I would love to be vice chair.
Okay.
All right, that's, let's start with chair. Rodney, is your feeling that self-nominations are the rule?
Or form. I nominate Rodney Orme to be chair of the University Assembly.
We have a second. Mark Fontana has nominated him. Okay, are there any other nominations from the floor?
I move that be closed.
All right, yeah, move the approach.
Or Robert's rule.
All in favor?
Aye.
It's unanimous. No, any opposed? No, that's fine. Rodney, you're the new chair. Congratulations. You're the chair. You're the chair until an hour from now. Okay. I'm the chair. All right. Do we have nominations for vice chair?
I nominate Mark.
Okay. Mark Fontana has been nominated by Leon. Seconded by Kate. It is Kate.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kate. And all those. Any other nominations? Okay, Leon. You nominated someone. Okay. All in favor of Mark Fontana's vice chair? All right. Any opposed? Fine. That's wonderful. Mark, congratulations.
All right. And congratulations to Ari.
Oh, yes. Good for Ari. That's great. Now, one of the things I can say to the vice chair and chair is, and Mark brought this up, is that it's useful for the executive committee to have a meeting at least 3 days before the meeting in order to discuss, you know, what might be considered in the UA meeting or whatever action. So I'm assuming that will continue.
Right? I was thinking it might be advantageous for us to, knowing that we have a full body meeting every month, maybe perhaps the midweek of that, the exec board meeting, and then kind of around that, if there are issues that are popular, that are important that need to be addressed quickly, the exec board also kind of maybe taking a weekly thing.
What do you mean by the midweek of
it? Okay, so if between full body meetings,
yes,
the exec board would meet in the week in between those full body meetings.
Okay, so 2 weeks into the period. That makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. You guys decide, and then remember to call the other two of us to get a set. Seth, you're an executive from the grad center. Right. Okay. Congratulations, everybody. Now we move on to the 30-minute item, which is discussion about UA committee liaisons. And Mark, you had a point about this. I guess the thing just taking the chair's prerogative now to say, one of the things that we had established at the last meeting was that certain people had an interest in certain committees, and those interests would be honored unless other people came forward with even more fiery, compelling interest in the particular committee. And the way that it was, let's see.
Elizabeth was going to be on transportation.
Elizabeth was on transportation committee. Coast and Judicial was,
wasn't that going to be you?
Cade. Right, Cade was going to be Coast and Judicial.
I remember during that conference call that we had, I remember where I was driving during that segment, someone else was also interested. We were going to have two people doing that.
The Coast and Judicial?
Yeah,
well, I think Kate is the lead person.
I agree.
That would be fine if someone wanted to help out as well.
Right. Well, you can keep in touch with it, but the problem is if you divide it as co-liaisons, what very often happens is that when things get tough, nobody shows. Not that you wouldn't show, but I mean, that often does happen. So what I suggest, yes, it says here Kate would do so. Abe, you said you would continue as a family services liaison.
Well, I think Bill is the fin for me.
Yeah. Okay.
The subcommittee of the child care committee.
Okay. Family services is Bill. Riddick. And Abe is the subcommittee on child care.
Child care.
Okay. Now, in a minute, Abe, we're going to be discussing the cost of the child care center. That that was an issue that was brought up as an addition to the agenda. And maybe what we'll do is we'll do that after we finish these others. Health services was and CURW were two that that were not staffed. And this might be an opportunity, Mark, for you to say something about what your thoughts are about committees that are not presently staffed.
Do we have a full list of committees that are and are not staffed? Because honestly, the ones who are staffed, I think, are working quite well. We return to especially social individuals. The ones that are not, though, I think it really needs to, the liaison needs to take on more of kind of a reactive role when they have personal interest in certain things and making sure that reports filed by, for example, the Cornell store are being looked at and then bringing any issues to the assembly. So kind of more of a reactive role.
I think there are only two that we're concerned about. Well, actually, there's CURW Health Services, and then there was the financial aid and minority
multicultural issues,
right? And one of the things that was suggested last year, and I think it's Elizabeth, certain committees, unless they're actually active and functioning outside of the UA. Like some of these were before we got the liaison in place, which we were supposed to have. If they're not actually functioning, then unless we feel there's a need to get them started and going, I don't think we need to energize them. We can just say that they're dormant committees for the time being.
Perhaps we can write into the charter some kind of statute so that a dormant committee
can be reactivated?
Yeah, but just a procedure, maybe a majority vote for activating a dormant committee that, let's say, had not a meeting for 2 years or 3 years.
There's a problem to this whole idea. So let's say TAS, for example. That's our art committee. That committee exists whether the UA, we disbanded the UA. That's their committee. That happens to serve the function of fulfilling the part of our charter that does. To say that, for example, there's no committee over in Gannett is not true. We don't staff it, okay? But we have an interest in it, except that the interest is really one of basically just sitting there. So the idea that there's a, quote, special UA committee, and that I'm the liaison, I go over and I say, Janet, identify 10 members of Gannett staff, we're going to make up this committee because the UA charter says we have to have one. No, that does not exist. Is there a steering committee of Gannett that has a UA member of Parliament? Yes, there was. So the idea that the committee exists or don't exist, what it really boiled down to was, did the committee care that they had theoretically report to us? And it was clear at the time that particularly religious work really had no interest in having the UA. You know, they got on with what they wanted to do. They had their own committee, and if the UA wanted to have somebody sit there, that's fine. But as far as that part of the charter is concerned, it really wasn't relevant. Personally, I was very happy and would be happy to get to see if there was anything that we could contribute to Gamash or they could contribute to us. I had a good working relationship with them, and it was only this idea that they had to task people to come up with this annual report, you know, that seemed to be the stumbling block that was a requirement. But I just want to say that it isn't a question of the committee exists or don't exist. It's a question of the relationship between the UA and committees that may already exist.
Right.
I'm sure some of the breakdown between committees that had that sort of underlying structure to them, ones that actually just don't exist because we made some kind of committee in our charter and there's nothing out there that's synonymous with that, and ones in which we have created there is in our charter and actually doesn't exist.
Right, well, it's in the charter. It's listed in the charter. We have specific standing committees to the Assembly, the Committee on Committees, the Code and Judicial Committee, the Joint Assembly's Multicultural Issues Committee, the Joint Assembly's Financial Aid Review Committee, and the Assembly System Review Committee. There are five committees. And then we all, this is all in the charter. I guess maybe I'm being too positivist by saying, you know, that we have to have these liaisons and so forth. Maybe what Ellis is saying is that they'll just go on their merry way and we shouldn't care. But I think one of the things that since these are mentioned in our charter, and since we are a body that can take issues on a university-wide basis that are pertinent in transportation and planning and so forth to the university as a whole in the way that we did the code. Even though with the code we have responsibility delegated in the charter, with these other committees we also have a responsibility to vet procedures in front of the university, and so we should have responsible liaisons working to bring the issues forward and take issues from here to there. So I can see what you mean as far as some of these committees that are our standing committees, and I think that's what Mark is referring to. The Committee on Committees, the Joint Assembly's Multicultural Issues Committee, which we haven't done much with or anything with, the Assembly System Review Committee, those could be the dormant ones which we call to order when necessary. And we can put a clause in the charter, and maybe the vice chair can think about how we do that. We amend the charter to that effect. But these other committees that we already have some liaison relationship to, I think we should take seriously and do something with, in spite of the fact that they exist independent of our actions.
Why shouldn't they also be able to be dormant from our perspective, meaning that if we feel there's no reason to think that campus stores of interest to us at this time, I don't see why we should invest some of this time in being a liaison.
Well, Mark has said that he's interested in being one.
In general terms, too. Never doing anything necessarily until it comes up. You know?
Okay. Sorry. James. So, Jim.
Either way, when I look at the University Assembly by delegation of president, I realize it's 2003 documents. These were of interest to the president. You know, the Cornell store, you know, when I look at it, they talk about the legislative stuff, they talk about the hearing, or the code of conduct, they're talking about hearings and reviews, and they said,
what are you referring to?
I'm at the bylaws, 1.3, have legislative authority
over policies which guide the activities.
Department of Transportation,
right.
Cornell Services, Cornell
right.
United Religious
right.
Work, University Health Services, and Cornell
right.
Store.
Right. Those are the ones that we're talking about now.
These other things talk about, then we have authority over how we organize and how we run things. Oh, and then it says, establish standing committees, administrative performance of duties, and have authority to determine conflicts. And the other big one is examine other matters which involve the interests or concerns of welfare of a substantial segment of the university community.
Right, right.
So the bottom line is, it tells me here that we're responsible for code of conduct, the character review board, the legislative authority means all their rules and key rules and processes for these four things, all and anything else that we think would be of relevance to the president.
Right.
So I don't know if we escape the Cornell store unless we go back to the president and say, you're no longer interested in independent or our direct running of the store. Maybe in 2005 they'd come up with own governance and we didn't even know it.
Right.
And maybe we're no longer needed in that
right.
role.
Right. Well, I think maybe at this point we need Mark is the liaison to the campus store. I forgot to mention that.
It's an important part.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And health services, we haven't placed anybody in, or United Religious Work, but all of the others we have. And they could. Maybe we should now poll people to see, or ask people to see, if there's somebody who wants to take on, Dan was that before, the health services question, that is, the liaison, get to know what health services committee is doing. There are several of them, there's mental health, there's, and get to know what it's doing and see how we need to, where we need to discharge our responsibility in that system, and what position we occupy in relation to it. That system. Who wants to do that? Anyone? Ellis. Okay, lovely. Ellis Lowe has. United Religious Work. Is there anybody on fire to do that? It's a hot topic now, I mean.
I just want to let you know, let people know that I tried contacting them after our last meeting, and I've gotten no response from them whatsoever.
Janet Shortall would be a good person to talk to.
Do you know? I've called her twice.
This
is rare.
So maybe you should look into that, Robbie. Okay. I think we've, now, the interesting thing is that family services, which is one that we have taken on and established it through our, how does that work? Ari, do we need to make that a part of our charter? What did we decide?
I believe that there is family services in the charter. There was one list of committees where it was omitted from, but elsewhere in the charter, the full charge of the committee is spelled out.
Right, because we did include, and this was under our power to initiate a committee, right? Our power to initiate a committee that was, because we have that, right. All right.
This one, I think, is an associated committee, so
right.
It also reports to HR.
Human resources.
You know, like,
right. Right, okay. So I think that's okay. I think the only thing with the charter that we need to think about right now, and Mark, you can look at that, is where it is we want to interject this idea of dormancy if it's necessary.
I think we think three categories here. The UA standing committees that should be dormant because they serve no function right now, those the ones that just haven't done anything. You know, UA liaison positions where we have legislative authority, where perhaps we just need to define a new relationship with this autonomous body out there that's doing something, chugging along, and maybe somehow intercede ourselves and have a little bit of power there. And then finally, committees that work just fine as standing committees that we have either authority over or are part of, and then kind of figure out what we do with the charter. That's probably something we can take on. I don't know.
Item 8 in the charter is. All right, we've appointed liaisons. Now, the thing to do is that apparently it's the role of the liaisons to call to order the committee. Now, as Ellis said, some of these committees are already in order and spinning, but the Code Judicial does need a call to order. So you'll need to actually contact the head of the Code Judicial Committee, and the names of all the members are in the University Assemblies or the Assemblies Office website. And I think Kathleen is maybe still the chair of it, right, of the Code Judicial. Transportation Advisory and the Planning Committee probably have been doing work all through the summer, planning all of our lives and advising us on transportation. but we need to link up with them. And so whoever is the liaison, contact the committee chair and tell them that we are there.
He's no longer on the
Elizabeth Saunders, who is transportation.
Well, Elizabeth,
Dan is gone. Elizabeth is. We already parsed those out. So Elizabeth, I guess we should reflect it in the minutes. But somebody, maybe Rodney, you can call Elizabeth and make sure that she's on with that.
I think Ed would do it too.
Ed and Elizabeth, two of them. Well, you can tell Ed and Elizabeth. They can both go. The last item in this committee liaisons would be a specific issue having to do with child care that was brought up by Liam.
Mm-hmm.
Having to do with the cost of the... maybe we could take 2 minutes for Leon to raise that issue, and if we need to, we'll bump it down to additional items for the floor if it takes more than that. But it's something that could be brought up, Bill or Abe.
Yep.
Okay, so Leon, what is it?
As a member of the employee assembly, some staff members have come to me saying that they're very disappointed that they cannot afford the high cost of Cornell child care. I really don't know what it is, what the cost is, but they weren't able to enroll their children there. And they were just wondering also in terms of, is it possible to take a breakdown, for example, of how many faculty have children enrolled there, how many grad students, and how many staff, and also in terms of, although there was like a stipend, like what the cost is and how they determine, you know, who gets a stipend, who gets some help, and even getting a stipend is still not affordable to some people. So it's things like that.
Well, briefly, so the child care committee is aware of this. It's been watching the opening of the Bright Horizons, the lottery process, and is collecting now data on the actual enrollment and with a breakdown in terms of the different populations in Cornell. And we'll be trying to assess and create a document that summarizes the situation as of the opening, basically. And then the topic of cost, which was part of the discussion over the last year before the opening, is on the agenda for this coming year to be reviewed. In some sense, this is a case where the HR had been chugging along before a committee had been assembled, and they had already fixed the finances in the relationship with Bright Horizons, and there wasn't a lot of leeway in terms of setting the cost structure, and the university had already committed its subsidy. But it's clear already, at least anecdotally, that it's not actually serving the full community in the way that HR wanted to do. Before, they had better ambitions for it being accessible, more accessible than it appears to be right now. So we are trying to get that document together. In fact, there's a draft of it already together that includes data to give a sense of how representative the population is and or isn't. And then, my hope is, and we've been working on this over the summer, to come with a collection of about 5 position statements from the child care committee that will deliver to the UA and to the HR and to potentially up to the president's office through the UA that summarize the discussions to date, open challenges, and analysis of this first big effort by HR, which is the Bright Horizons and how where it stands. But so that it's a good point, and it's one that I think we may need to use the UA leverage to get the president's office to respond and go out and find millions of dollars a year to actually make this center affordable.
But I don't know what the capacity is. It's 150
children. 150
children,
and there were 400 families that were in the lottery.
So it was heavily oversubscribed, and then, but a large, it appears that a reasonable number of people who were given spots were unable to afford to go, even with the child care grant.
I want to intervene here because I think what you pointed to is one key element of our meeting structure, which is reports and discussion of particulars about these individual areas. And if we could have a report fairly quickly from child care with statistics such as this, that we could then take action on and develop resolutions around, that might be the next step, rather than making this an informational meeting. You know what I mean?
Right.
So maybe in the next month or the
beginning. Yeah, I think within the next month, these we have three of these five position statements that have been finalized. The one that you'd like to see most is being constructed, but there's also an employee representative on that committee who should come this fall to the employee assembly and report as well.
Just one last quick thing. The fact now that there's 150 spaces, they're all taken.
Yeah.
So what, I mean, we don't have to answer this here, but my question is, so then how do you accommodate those people that weren't able to afford it? There's nowhere to put them.
Well, they still potentially have their child care grant, and we'll need to find and hope to be able to use it in finding child care outside of Cornell. This is never going to serve the whole need of Cornell. The good thing is that child care grant isn't Cornell Center specific. It can be used at any center in the community, and that was actually the positive side of the choice that was made about this financing of this center,
which
it doesn't bias against people who don't get into this center.
Yeah, but those are no cheaper than Cornell.
Well, in fact, most of them are. All but maybe one of them are, in fact, cheaper than Cornell.
Well, like Marty said, to be continued.
Yeah, I think it should be continued fairly soon because it's just the horizon. It's just on the horizon.
Right.
Can I add a sentence?
Yeah.
That perhaps the university would like to extend the needs line admission policy to the daycare.
It did.
But not if the grant.
The bottom line, honestly, is that the Cornell needs to invest more money in subsidized child care to truly solve this problem.
Let's get the statistics, and we can have a resolution to that effect. All right? And the statistics would come along with a representative from Bright Horizons or whoever it is
It may be best for it to be a representative from HR.
Or HR, right. One or the other. Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thanks. Now we need to transition to setting of terms for. Oh, and Ari's gone. Who knows? Okay. Well, then we'll bump ahead because he knows about the setting of terms for members of the Family Service Committee. There's an oversight. It's item 9.3 in the charter says the committee, Family Services Committee. By the way, it's in the charter already. Okay. Okay. The committee is charged to identify the needs of non-academic staff, academic staff, graduate professional students, and undergraduate students with family responsibilities to address issues related to work, study, life, balance, and so forth. Family Services consists of 15 voting members. Constituent assemblies appoint a total of 8 from their respective constituencies in the following number of students. May appoint 1, graduate and professional students, 2, employee assembly appoint 3.
Yeah.
One employee representative is part of a Cornell University collective bargaining agreement, and the faculty senate may appoint 3.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
My copy, which I printed off the website, has no 9.3, so is it formally adopted?
It's formally adopted, and it's been passed by the president's office.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it should be in under assembly.cornell.edu/charter/charter.
I went to the University Assembly webpage, clicked, when you said, read this before the meeting, and I went through the
right.
And I printed it, and I got 9.1, 9.2, and 10.
That's interesting. Well, Ari can tell you why. I went to him and asked him, and he said that one version of it doesn't have it, and this you must have printed that one, or maybe it just got on. But it is here now, and it's in front of my eyes as we speak. Okay. The student assembly, the faculty senate may appoint three. The president may appoint up to five voting members who shall be community or university experts in subjects relating to family issues in the charge and the charge of the committee. Now, we do not have terms for those, and normally what we have is rotating terms so that when, for example, one of the five members goes off from the president, he'll be able to appoint somebody else. I'll wait for Ari to come to lay out how we might do that, but we should put that in as a sentence in the charter. The subcommittee on child care services, charged to identify the university community concerning child care services, study proposal brought by members of the university community to meet those needs, and to advise Family Services Committee, the Assembly, the Vice President of the University of Human Resources, and other senior members of the university administration concerning such proposals. Subcommittee consists of 13 voting members, Student Assembly 1, Graduate Professional 2, Employee Assembly 3, Faculty Senate 2. The President appoints a total of 5 voting members, experts in related child care. And then the non-voting members of the committee are liaison from the University Assembly, from its members, and up to 3 appointed by the president to serve as liaisons from related administrative units. So, what we need to do is, we know the liaison appointed term limit, but we don't, or term of office, but we don't, we haven't stipulated the other. Keep that in mind. When Ari comes back, we'll discuss it and more. We've done item 11, call for the first meeting of CJC, PAC, campus planning. So we are moving on to items to discuss from the floor, and that item is PeopleSoft. We have a number of minutes to do that because we're moving so nicely. Who would like to be the lead person on that?
I had a meeting with the registrar.
I'm sorry, what?
I had a meeting with the registrar's office along with the student assembly and the executive committee.
Okay.
And we discussed PeopleSoft. Actually, the point of the meeting was first, are you all familiar with the schedulizer, kind of the function that serves? For those of you that don't know, schedulizer is used by a vast majority of students to construct their course schedule. It's very user-friendly, it's very image-oriented. It's a lot better than the system that, frankly, that Cornell uses to do this. It's a bit less cumbersome. And Schedulizer stopped working as a result of PeopleSoft. And this meeting was basically what we found from this meeting was the registrar working with Schedulizer, which is a complete independent entity, its own business. The registrar is now working with Schedulizer, and they're putting together some sort of written contract of sorts so information can be shared so the Schedulizer can continue to operate. Prior to that, Schedulizer was unauthorizingly, picking up material from Cornell, and now that they were asked to stop doing it in a way that was not allowed, and they're henceforth working with Cornell. So that's positive. So Schedulizer is working again. PeopleSoft has its own set of issues which are being worked out. According to the registrar, it's a matter of syncing the servers and a matter of a few other things, but those are slowly being worked on.
Who owns Schedulizer?
Two Cornell graduates, basically computer science students.
Just a point, because I have students who use Schedulizer, so their schedule, of course, we end up adjusting in the department's times of our classes. So now we have conflicts because we didn't use the official system and we're doing independent study issues. Schedulizer, students seem to love it. Jim Blair doesn't care, but one system should rule them all. And needs to have the current course catalog appropriately loaded, or Mammal 2 Watch never knows that. Who knows what kind of it is.
That was
okay.
The issue.
Okay.
But at the same time, though, with the whole one system thing, what we've been noticing is that any time it's all left up to Cornell, it shuts down, and it comes to the point where people can't even log into the system to see their courses. So the beauty of what was going on with Schedulizer is that you can make your schedule to the
had everything itemized for you and been selected, and then as I mean, Cornell seems it was difficult for them to get up-to-date information as classes were changing. Then that's when students started getting messed up schedules, because schedule-wise wasn't able to alert them to that. But with the classes and whatnot, if it was a free range of information, or, you know, here's our software loaded into your system, then it would be fine.
All things are possible with money coming next.
Okay, that was James. Jim, Kate.
Some more questions for Mark. With the new formal agreement, are schedules synced now between Cornell and Schedulizer?
As of last week, no. With this written agreement, henceforth with the new semester, they will be linked. There, you know, there will be some sort of thing where Cornell is actively allowing Schedulizer to use up-to-date information to ensure that, you know, there aren't conflicts. But in either case, it's always wise, once you've made a schedule with Schedulizer, to go back to Cornell and just at least check, which is something that most students are now at least aware of.
And
again, there's nothing been finalized yet.
I'm sorry?
There's nothing finalized yet.
They are, according to them, they are, it's a very positive relationship they need to have now, and they're putting together a written agreement.
All right.
As far as I know, I'll have a meeting with them probably in a couple months on that.
What,
just so you know, I work in the registrar's office, so.
No.
But
I get the flack of it all.
It would be, if PeopleSoft doesn't work out the wrinkles in the coming semester and year, it seems like I'm sure Cornell, all parts of Cornell have interest in making this work. Somebody made this choice, and a lot of things are working less well than the in-house software did, and it's not clear whether that's just growing pains, switchover troubles, or whether and in the long run PeopleSoft is going to be seamless. But it to date seems like a downgrade. From the faculty side, certainly, the departments are struggling. So, something that would be worth, if they continue to adapt, great. If they don't, it seems like somebody might have to give them a nudge.
There's two points to that that I have not had to meet that question. That they made, one of which is, whenever you implement a new system, the first month of the new system is always going to be worse than the last month of the old system. And that's just the reality with upgraded software. Although this is, I tend to believe there are certain other things. But the other reality is that, for example, in all financial aid, something to do with finances, they are now moving to open source software, which is not PeopleSoft, which is, for those of you that don't know the jargon, open source, the code is available, any programmer can go and look at the code, make corrections to it, and put up their own version, which is something that I've always believed is always a bit more advantageous for the system. So Cornell does have that kind of on the back burner as well, which I mean, I'd like to see the whole system move towards more open source rather than kind of proprietary software like PeopleSoft, but that's neither here nor there, nor is that really relevant at this point, I feel like.
This is Rodney talking. Mind you that this semester is our first full semester in the new software. We converted in spring halfway through, so we didn't have the full effect of being able to have to do add drop in the new system. And it went through 3 weeks of testing. Testing went along great, they said.
So it's a real thing that
comes out. No, CIT. CIT was doing the actual testing. Mind you, and I work in that office, and I still had my doubts that it was going to be what we were used to with our own system. There is growing pains. There's going to be growing pains for a year because this system is so complex and that it brings every department together in one system and integrated just about everything. Yeah. Certain things are going to hiccup that you weren't expecting to hiccup. And other things are going to go along real smoothly. So
is this CIT, so think of where we have some authority, this is under CIT. This is CIT's problem, to the extent that it's a problem. Is that accurate?
Not necessarily.
Is it somebody's day
shared
problem?
It's shared by all the systems, HR. Well, you've got separate modules. You have the student administration modules, which include student records, financial aid, and part of student finances. There's also...
But so if it remains broken, who can be held responsible for that?
Nobody. I tried. The answer is nobody. That's
Randy
Randy.
Right. What, clarify what you mean by broken.
Well, it continues to half of the undergrads, half of the employees, half of the faculty, and perform less well into 2010 and 11, when does...
John Finan says the advising part of PeopleSoft won't be ready for another couple of years.
That's the actual advising matter.
When the juniors will have graduated.
So it's not, we couldn't send inquiries to one central location.
If you're talking about student records, they should go to David Yeh.
Mm-hmm.
David Yeh is a great guy. David Yeh knows all about PeopleSoft. David Yeh is the university spokesman for defense, such that it is a PeopleSoft.
Student records.
Well, okay. I guess the question for this committee, trying to keep focus, is this a matter involving interest in terms of the welfare of the substantial segment of the university that this assembly feels we need to look at?
Yeah.
Or not? And as I can tell you, and everybody here is smart enough to know, there's the financial investment and all the intellectual capital went in before they made this switch. They are committed to it for a couple of years anyway. And they're going to accept growing pains for some period of time. I think that's the reality. I have no empirical statement, nobody backing me up like David Yeh, but I think we all understand the reality. They went through a lot of this before they made this commitment. Commitment's been made, and we're going to weather it for a couple of years, and it's either going to evolve to what we need, or at that point, somebody will decide to trash it and put the money into trying again. There are communities that have, and I don't know their names, and I wish I could see that information, that do have checkpoints and when modules are coming online and who do you, if you have a problem with something, who do you report it to and how would you know if it's already been reported or it's a new and distinct problem. CIT has involvement in that. There are people who are looking after this and a lot of people, you know, wear bulletproof vests when they talk about PeopleSoft. So I think it's being well looked after, and I think the comment that I see from this committee is who's caretaking it, where do we send our trouble reports, and when does the report come back to all of us is not widely known or dispersed. So at this point, I'd say the assembly may have a concern to the university saying, we know somebody's looking after the store, but we can't identify them. We're not seeing something on a quarterly or semi-annual basis as to where PeopleSoft is headed. We don't know, don't have a click of a button where we can type in our concerns. You know, we all center on the obvious, but this doesn't do anything. You know,
this is Marty speaking. I think James Jim has raised the gauntlet. I mean, he said are there people in the assembly that feel this is a topic that's, according to our charter, worth our investing some time in study and also getting comments upon from other areas of the university that are deeply engaged in it. And I think we can take a poll of people to ask. Let's raise our hands to say, how many feel that we should spend some time thinking about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Actually, the ministry's position is
7, 8, 9. That's even the majority of members. And I think what we can do is translate that into a sort of ad hoc group interest group that will to look at information and what would it be called, information and systems.
It's called administrative systems planning committee.
Well, yes, that's the committee that we'll speak to. But I mean, locally in our, we should have 2 or 3 people that are preparing presentations to the UA and advocating action based upon, you know, research that they've done with this committee and with others. Yes, would you like to
And if I can clarify what I think the initial charter of this ad hoc committee should be is find out is there really a problem. If we go to somebody else's meeting and find out they really are minding the sword,
right,
then we should come back and decide if we want to liaise on that committee or let them do their work.
All right. Well, then what I suggest is that we have three persons out of that nine that be sort of the core, and one of those people can be the organizer in the sense of getting word of who we should go to. We can go as a university assembly committee, I'm thinking university assembly empowered committee, to look at this issue, to bring a report to the assembly, and you can do it as early as the 24th, which is our next meeting, or we can make it
by the 24th.
I'm sorry, what?
We should try to end it.
Why don't we just ask David and whoever else he wants to bring along, come to the meeting and explain what's happening?
That may be okay, except that I'd like to have, as a chair pro tem, I'd like to request three people be responsible to focus this, rather than just have David Yeh come and we all just grill him. I think it's much better to have three people out of the nine, and who would be willing to do that? Mark, Randy, James? James. Okay, Mark, Randy, James. The three of you communicate by email and decide on who's going to do the inviting and also what the structure of questions. And with the view that we might discover there's nothing that needs to be done. But it appears from nine people saying it in the assembly that there's something that we want to find out.
I sent the email address of David Yeh Redgrave's card for those of you interested.
You're on the committee, so three of you, I don't know who's going to say it. You can, amongst yourselves, you can work it out.
Point of clarification.
Yeah.
David Yeh is not the only one. He's just in charge of the
team. Yeah, that's right.
So there's five or six people out there.
Right.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify. Everybody understands. It's not just David Yeh.
Right.
It's just everybody
has doing all the
right. Students. And we're doing this for the university as a whole, not just for the students.
It's only assembly
for the faculty. We're representing the faculty with Randy. Yes.
I would like to offer after we come together and decide what we're presenting and what everybody hears. One possible thing would be that the UA set up some kind of forum for the end users that just were never heard by the administration that made the decision, and just say this impacts the community, has impacted the community so negatively, perhaps it's good to get the input for the future rewrites of this program so it can have a positive.
Well, that's something definitely to bring as a resolution to, as a consequence of the research and the presentation that goes on.
I was just going to say, to sort of add on to that, I think we're working on in the student assembly and actually organizing one of those sort of forums. So maybe we can keep posted and send emails out to the listeners so that we can have not necessarily student feedback sessions with the IT and members in charge so that they can give you the students, but also faculty and employees as well. That's going to be in process. The essay starts tomorrow. So I'll tell Brian, the assembly president. They've worked at his gate during the executive meeting yesterday. I don't remember what it was.
There are different things that different assemblies do. I think our assembly, I can imagine, I mean, I thought the vision of what we could do. Student assembly will do something like that. And ours would be to have the presentation as it affects this particular issue, as it affects the campus as a whole, all constituencies, and come up with a resolution such as Randy suggests or others, if it's deemed necessary. That sounds. I don't know where Ari is. Does anybody know where Ari is?
I
want
to make a point. I had a lead in Ari doing.
The reason I'm asking is that I'd like to get this one item out of the way, which is the terms. Maybe what we can do is ask Ari to prepare a language that we can consider for rotating terms for Family Services Committee. So I'll put that in a minute. That's an agenda item for September 24th. This, by the way, the PeopleSoft one and is an agenda item for the 24th of September, yes?
Yeah.
And okay. I'll be in touch about
and family services.
For the 24th, right?
Okay.
It might well make sense.
Okay.
Marty, could we not determine the terms and just have them put the language to wrap around whatever we consider would be appropriate?
Well, only thing we have to do is he describes the language, because you know all of the other committees it's their terms specified.
Right.
So we need to at least all the ones that we need to specify them. Are you saying we could just authorize him to put them in the charter? I think we have to.
No, what I was saying was he's not going to determine the terms.
Right.
We're going to determine the terms, but he'll write it up. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He's not going to determine it. We are. So why can't we just determine what the terms will be?
Do we want them for a year? Do we want them for 2 years?
Well, that's what I'm saying. We would determine that. So
we should discuss. Well, this sure we can do. Okay. Well, it's.
What's the precedent from the other standing committee?
Let's see. Yeah. Structure of association.
It's very.
Yeah. I'm trying to get my computer to wake up.
For instance, like if on the UA.
Well, look at it in one hand with the seniors.
Right.
It says here, Budget and Planning Committee, 17 voting members. Members shall serve 3-year terms on a staggered basis, with the exception of student members who shall serve 2-year staggered terms. That's the kind of language we need to put in family
right,
service.
Right, but we determine the terms. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
You could write the language.
That's what I was saying. You would propose. Oh, I see. Well, okay. Why don't we suggest the language for it then? You're saying we could do that.
No, I'm suggesting the terms.
The terms. Why don't we suggest the terms? Fine. The committee is charged to identify the committee consists of 15 voting members, a total of 8 voting members from respective constituencies. We can say serving 15 voting members serving 3-year terms on a staggered basis, with the exception of student members who shall serve 2-year staggered terms.
I think I would say, from my experience trying to staff one of these, that maybe 2 years would make it easier to staff if people wouldn't feel like the commitment was quite as large.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. Even 1 year, I would say for people who are looking at it, we're talking about people with kids that should be on this committee. So it may be easier, instead of having a long term, that they can have an opportunity to get on and continue on with a definite 1-year term.
Which then can be renewed.
And that way, one year renewed.
But there's a lot of emailing that has to go on, which is just
to reappoint people. We could say 2 years.
People, you have to find the person on the student assembly. And
well, then, do you think two years staggered terms and 1 year staggered terms for students?
I'd just go 2 years for everybody.
2 years for everybody. 2 year staggered terms for everyone. But renewable.
But renewable, yeah. I think that
for how many terms?
That's a limitation.
A limit on renewable. Renewable 2 times.
I just want to make sure we clarify. This is still like speaking, by the way. I just want to clarify because, no, based on what I see in the family services, there's people that are there that are very energized. Looks like they're ready to stay there for, you know, the next few years. And some of the things we're working on are very far-reaching, and I would not want to limit these people if, you know, they want to stay on and keep moving. There's nobody else that's really interested. So I'd be afraid of limiting terms.
I agree.
My opinion.
Just the renewable.
You're renewable.
Okay. I don't know. I've been on committees where people have been in that circumstance and have been on the committee for 20 years, and sometimes it can be a little
but
bit...
But that's where the assembly can decide to can that person again.
Well, I see. But what about presidential appointments?
Well, they're typically that's based on the advice of the administrative body, like the HR. They're like HR in this case, and they can then decide to take that person off or not recommend for removal.
Okay. Okay, so we'll say 2 years staggered terms, renewable. Just period.
Period.
Okay. and I'll...
It's a pleasure of the UI.
So, is there...
I have to make sure that you have language in there that's business renewable by who. He says, I want to stay on, he gets to stay on. Or he says, I want to stay on, and then agree that he can stay on.
At the pleasure of the respective appointing agencies.
It's also, that I know for some of the other committees, you may have to refer to the session, make sure Ari does, or the mechanism for removing people from committees.
All right, well, I'll put that in removal.
Make sure he puts that in.
Okay, so basically it's 2 year staggered terms renewable at the... pleasure is not the right word, but at the something of the respective appointing bodies and discretion. Thank you, discretion. Okay, or by action of the respect renewal by action of. Okay.
Does staggered imply some type of strength?
Yes. What it means is that somebody's on for 2 years. Half of the people are on for 1 year for the first year, and then 2 years. Can be 2 years.
So it's in theory always continuity.
So there's always continuity, so that everybody doesn't have to get renewed.
Well, so in practice, I'm going to have to figure out what that means for this.
Yeah, I'm saying the same thing.
It just started, so...
Well, that's where you have to figure it out. That's one of the reasons why Ari asked me. Ari asked me to do something about it because the president was asking, you know, what...
When we originally did it, it didn't include them.
Okay, so that's that. Our last bit is any thoughts about one thing that I brought up in the. I don't know how the provost will be appointed this time, but I know that people are looking at provost candidates now, and I'm wondering whether we have any. Right or responsibility in, first of all, are there candidates for provost or is it just selected?
I don't think there are now. There's a search committee right now. Yeah. Confidential group.
Right, but there aren't candidates that are being vetted one against the other.
Well, they're taking the names and then they're making that list.
Right, I know, and checking it twice. The question is whether or not those names come down to two or three that then get circulated. Probably not.
No, that seems to be a black box.
Okay.
I would support it.
Would be what?
Distributed.
The name would be.
The process is you got a talent search, you got a nomination committee, you got a selection committee, and then the president and the selectee are going to take it to the trustees.
Right.
And those that figure out who it is and wish to, you know, lobby. When I look at the chart, I don't see any formal role until the provost's appointment is doing things that we think the university of Sunday has to step in on.
No.
I don't see a formal role. We all want one. I've been on three committees, and they all, you know, I'm hoping that I get that, you know. Okay.
I can tell you that as a member of the University South Faculty Committee involved in advising the president on the makeup of the committee, which, as you know, includes faculty, students, whatever, I suggested that the UA be included in that, and he said no. So,
well, there's the answer.
The only reason was he didn't say no about because he had representatives from all the other constituencies, he didn't see what addition of a member from the UA would do, since he already had all these other constituencies there.
So we need to
that
again.
No matter
the
showing
that we don't have enough prestige.
Oh no! I understand. I saw the selection list, and I know what you mean by that. There's the employee assembly and so forth. I guess what I was wondering is we had the provost come and speak to us, past provost, and I was wondering what we might do to express our interest in at the outset getting some kind of relationship with. Provostial quarters, and maybe it would be to get an early invitation in to have the person come and speak to us about his or her role.
I don't think we'll be seated until the spring at least.
Okay.
Has the search remained internal, or is it open out there to external as well?
It's It's internal.
It's internal.
He said he wanted to keep it internal.
Yeah.
Okay. I think
it's currently in Cornell.
Yeah, it's going to be Cornell.
Okay. Well, that leads us, I mean, that's sort of a segue to our last item, which is there any additional items from the floor that you want to raise, having heard what you, having been through our first meeting?
There's one more.
Okay. Go ahead. No.
Okay. Just that the academic, the committee to consider academic integrity, which was formed last semester by former dean of faculty, Charles Walcott, is now moving into a drafting committee. Basically, the result of that committee was deciding that we need to unify Cornell's academic integrity policies under perhaps one single honor code or one more cohesive code in general. We're looking right now to staff that committee. Faculty interest is kind of something we're looking into severely because we need, although students won't be difficult to get, getting a few solid faculty who are committed to this would be wonderful and something we absolutely need in order to push this forward.
Make sure you also include faculty that have administrative advisement of students. I'm talking about like the assistant associate deans at all the colleges. That would be probably very beneficial for you guys.
Are you looking for somebody from career day? Are you looking for
anybody's interested? Yes,
I'll step up right now. I've done this kind of work before and I have a lot of precedent.
Great.
And my wife's from the journal.
Yeah. I would like to too.
As well as one.
All right. Great. The one additional item from the floor that I had to raise, it was something to do with that question about the provost and what our role is at the university assembly on the campus. I know it's defined in our charter, and we talked a bit about it, and it's great. I think we have energy towards fulfilling that role as it's defined. Are there, I'm wondering if any of you have 2 minutes worth of ideas about other things that we might move in the direction of, or issues that we think are pressing, like PeopleSoft, but just come to your mind now that we might consider in the months to come, this semester.
I don't know how pressing this is, but the charter review.
Right.
I think that's extremely important for the charter to reflect the reality of what's going on today.
I
mean, this.
Yes.
That's a nomination, but I second that. Having read this and having seen this meeting, in some cases I think we're a little confused as to what are our core competencies and who's on what committees. I mean, I think it seems, as an outsider new to this process, there needs to be a little rigor into who we are and what we stand for and what we do. This doesn't, I mean, you know, paragraph one of these committees is, will consist of this and this and this. Paragraph one should be, what's the purpose of this committee?
Which committee? Give us an example of which committee you're talking
about. I mean, the Executive Committee of the University Assembly, you know, paragraph one is membership. General Committees. The Committee on Committees shall have 5 members, blah, 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 blah. Explained all the things that they do, how they elect, how they nominate. Doesn't tell me, you got to get way in here to kind of figure out
why is this thing?
What is the committee
the
to do?
If one goes back to the minutes, about 4 years ago, we did away with the Committee on Committees because we, in fact, just did what the committee on committees were doing. And it's never been active. And I think if Ari goes back, he will find that the Committee on Committees was to be removed from the charter as a real committee. I'm trying to remember who the, we had a very, very articulate undergraduate who left, who basically was chair of that committee and never met, and we, no one had any recollection.
Okay, well, look, there's 2 things involved here. One is removing committees from the charter, and the other, which I think is a no-brainer piece of cake kind of thing, but the other is, what are we here for? And if that's the question you're asking, then I thought you spoke very eloquently to it by reading what it is we're here for, which is to bring issues up. And I guess I was, in this last item from before, trying to ask us to think about that. We brought a good one up, I think, the PeopleSoft and information technology. Keep it in mind as the months progress. Sorry. Hi.
Hi.
I'm sorry.
Am I allowed to
talk? Absolutely.
Introduce yourself. You're an ad hoc member.
I've got 30 seconds.
You know.
Yeah. My name is Beth McKinney. I'm the employee elected trustee, and so this is my first month of meetings. I was at the EA meeting today, and I just have one idea that I'd like to bring up for this committee to think about. And that is, I've been approached, and so has the employee assembly, to look into the question of should this campus be a smoke-free campus. The answer may be yes, maybe no, and I'm not taking any sides to it, but the question came up because of three reasons. One is because of the litter and how much it costs the university to clean it up, of cigarette butts. Two is the health of staff, faculty, and students. And three is just the whole sustainability issue. I would like to participate in putting together a short, maybe long, research paper with a bunch of ways to answer that question and present it to the UA to see if they might be interested in formulating some sort of resolution around, you know, why or why not. I mean, Cornell is a leader, and at least we should explore this, and at the very least, we should try to clean up our own litter.
Yeah.
Are there any other schools that are smoke-free already that you're aware of?
Yes, there are probably over 50 universities that have gone smoke-free. Now, I don't know the size of them. They might be teeny tiny, and it might be a step to go, you know, here's much bigger. And that's where I want to look at the pros and cons. But I've done a bit of research already, and I have a ton of information that I would love to share.
Who on the UA, Beth is an ad hoc member of the UA, and you're joining with a fellow member. Who would be, actually a health services person would be a good person to at least link up. Do we welcome that as an issue for discussion in the future?
Yeah, I think so.
Probably October, maybe.
What I'm thinking, and I know Art maybe aims to answer this, if I gather some people to work on gathering the information and presenting it to you with as much as we could possibly gather, that would save all of you from volunteering, from doing anything more than you're already doing.
I think Mark can be coordinating that with you.
Okay.
That's a great idea.
Great.
That's a great idea. Everybody in agreement? Okay.
Yeah.
Terrific.
There's one other issue actually that I come to mind. I've heard the initiative called it's to lower the drinking age to 18, and that was something that the president sort of frequently said that he knows. At the current time, Ed will not support because, as the information shows, he is supportive, I suppose. That issue itself, I think, is something we ought to look into. At least personally for me, I just find like, the idea of ridiculous that you can, you know, serve your country in so many ways, but I can't go to a bar.
Well, maybe we should bring that up for more discussion at a later meeting. But we've got some concrete things to work on. Congratulations, everybody, and look forward to seeing you in the future. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I love it.
Mark second. Everybody in favor. Amy, our meetings are here every week, every time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.